Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce our panelists. We have Dr. Joel Schultz on the show, retired police chief. He's in the Colorado area right now. We like to say keep it an undisclosed location. He's had, you know, some people. He's had basically a fan base, you know, and we're just trying to protect him from the fan base. So, but good to have you back on the show, Chief.
I'm not worried about the fan base. It's the death threats that bother me.
Death threats. Oh, okay. And guys, a shout out to our sponsors. Please support our sponsors. They go the great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We've got our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million followers during the live show right now, and also twobells.com. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. So if you want cool gear like the shirt that I'm wearing, go to leoroundtable.com, go to the online store, or the mug that the chief is showing off, and go to leoroundtable.com and you know, place your order. We don't make a dime off of anything on the store. And when I'm buying stuff, I do it the same way you do. I go to the online store. I make a purchase. I have no discount code or anything. I make it because it is bare rock bottom prices. And we keep it that way to get our gear out there. So again, we don't make anything off the store. We're just trying to get our gear out there. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying the content, Brian. And Ray Dietrich of FormerLawman.com and Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? We've got two main stories. They have a tendency to be, you know, a little bit deeper. But our first one, we have two more people arrested in the Minnesota church invasion. Now, remember, that was not Minneapolis, but that was, you know, St. Paul. So, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, right next to each other. So we're going to be covering that. We've also got Portland mayor demands ICE leave after they used tear gas at a protest. We got charges being dismissed against a former North Carolina police officer and a fatal officer-involved shooting, but he did lose his job. Then we have a motorcyclist being fatally shot when he points a gun at officers during a struggle after a pursuit. We got Bakersfield police. There's a body cam showing a police officer shooting a suspect, leaving him in critical condition. We've got Christopher Taylor being reinstated as a police officer and getting his license back to be a cop. Jacksonville police officers fatally shoot a domestic disturbance suspect when he pulls out a gun. And then Greenville Sheriff's Office determines that a deadly deputy shooting of a knife-wielding suspect was justified. So there you go. So we'll cover, if it's okay with you, Chief, we'll cover the main stories one at a time, since they're kind of like in jurisdictions, you know, across the country. Sure. So the first one, we'll start off here in the Minneapolis area, but we're actually, you know, where that Minnesota church is at. The Daily Signal, it's really the LibertyDaily.com, two more arrested in Minnesota church invasion. And federal authorities arrested two more people in this Minnesota church invasion. And this is according to our favorite AG, Pam Bondi. And she made this announcement on Monday. And she said, if you riot in a place of worship, we will fine you. And I believe her. We've made two more arrests in connection with the coordinated attack in City's Church, which is in St. Paul, Minnesota. And Ian Davis Austin and Jerome D'Angelo Richardson, they both got added to the list, so they've been popped. Both Austin and Richardson appear in the indictment that a federal grand jury handed down on Thursday. So these people are actually being indicted. And Minnesota Public Radio reported that authorities arrested Austin on Friday. And this group of anti-ICE agitators, they interrupted the Sunday service last month at City's Church in St. Paul. It's a non-denominational Christian church. And according to the indictment, both Austin and Richardson, the two latest additions to the indictment list, they met with Nikema Levy Armstrong and Chantel Louisa Allen before they invaded the church. And now, of course, we've got the name we've been waiting for. Former CNN host and independent journalist Don Lemon, he told Richardson, quote, don't give anything away, unquote, while speaking to his online audience as he was live streaming the invasion. Both defendants allegedly joined Levy Armstrong and Allen and Lemon in the church, and they engaged in, quote, menacing and threatening behavior, unquote, toward those in the church service, such as physically obstructing them, attempting to exit or move about within the church, which is just, you know, and that I'm assuming it appears that that is the actual language they used in the charging instrument in the affidavit. or the indictment. Austin allegedly stood with other agitators in and around the main aisles in the church. And this is turned a church service. And they were intimidating or acting to intimidate the church members, obstructing and interfering with their freedom of movement, approaching the pastor and the congregants in a menacing manner. And near the end of the operation, they loudly berated the pastor with questions about Christian nationalism and Christians wanting to have their faith be the law of the land. It's just crazy. Richardson allegedly joined Don Lemon and independent journalist Georgia Fort as they surrounded the pastor. Are you kidding me? And then on Friday, Pam Bondi, our attorney general, announced the arrest of Don Lemon and Fort, Trey Hearn Cruz, and Jamal Lundy. And the week before, law enforcement had arrested Levy, Armstrong, Allen, and William Kelly, who's the guy that posted videos of this incident online under the handle of DeWoke Farmer, of all names. So there you go. Chief Schultz.
You know, Chip, as I was reading the assignment to look at this material today, I went down a rabbit hole and I started seeing, you know, the Twitter feeds and or X and different kinds of spouting off of folks like the woke guy. And I, you know, we talked about this church invasion in at the SHOT Show on the live show. But at the time, I didn't know the details. I was just appalled that somebody would choose the church as a target and disrupt the service. But when you look at the indictment, there's over 20 individual points of alleged illegal behavior. And, you know, the intimidation, the refusing to let people leave, keeping parents separated from their kids downstairs. It was super organized, as all of these things are. We've said this time and time again on this show that these things are not spontaneous. So not only do we have the recordings of the plan, but we see the plan executed in the video. So the folks went in kind of en masse, but they deployed as planned within the church, and they just sat there for a little while, and then they went into disruption mode. And some of the language and some of the accusations and the perverted theology that was being spouted out by Lemon and others, Lemon or whatever his name is, it just gets worse and worse the more you look at it. I'm just convinced, not in any conspiratorial way, but this is really a battle of ideology, which is largely anti-Trump. And I understand some of the sentiment, but it's really not about ICE. It's not about us at all. It's about organizations that are being funded and deployed and planned and aided by technology and surveillance and communication. In order to disrupt the presidency, I'm confident of that. And I say that because, you know, as everybody knows, if you look at the statistics, the small percentage of ICE activity that's going on in Minneapolis that has the eyes of the nation focused on it, the most prolific ICE activity is down in Texas. 25% of the stuff that's going on with ICE is actually in the state of Texas. I just don't remember seeing any riots. I don't remember seeing anybody shot. I don't remember, you know, the news being filled with images of pepper spray being sprayed in protesters' faces. So it's not about a true national movement, although they have moved the needle on the sentiment anti-ICE to, I think, impugn the reputation and the credibility of the Trump administration. And again, the White House has done some things that that present bad optics, and using a lot of the political capital in a way that's been kind of frittered away. So we see some changes. We see Homan going out there and trying to negotiate, which is just a super very interesting contrast in the way that the administration has handled conflict. It's usually like, okay, I've got the bigger bulldozer, I've got more guns, I'll go do what I want to do, and you guys can sort it out later. And so these negotiations or even simply communication, I think, is a good step forward. But, you know, the feds are using LPRs, license plate readers, and facial recognition, and drones, and probably other types of surveillance that we may not even realize. But so is the other side. And it's super highly organized and super highly financed. And the American people are eating up the propaganda, you know, the fake pictures of kids in cages, the fake pictures of just a moment in time when somebody's getting pepper spray, but you don't see that they were attacking the officer. This glorification of people like Good and Preddy, and bless their hearts, I'm sorry they're, you know, they got shot. But this protest movement is coming with so much baggage. If anybody takes any time to try to rationally look at the best sources, and, you know, who knows what the truth is, but it's a battle for the mind. It's not just a policy issue. It's a battle for the mind, the hearts and minds of the American people. The rational middle ground is losing ink time and air time to those folks that are trying to undermine the our democracy, really, in the name of preserving democracy and being against oppression.
What do you think about them using the Ku Klux Klan Act and the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act as charging instruments for these guys? You got 15 seconds.
I think it's very appropriate. You know, when they did the Protect the Abortion Clinic Act, I'm glad somebody said, okay, well, let's make sure that they're equally treating other institutions. And so that's appropriate. And the KKK says you can't deny people your civil rights as an organization. Absolutely appropriate.
All right, great. Commercial break. We'll be right back, guys.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by former chief and doctor currently, Joel Schultz at Joel Schultz. Joel Schultz.blogspot.com. That is a new one I just noticed, Chief.
Yeah. If people want to see more about what I write about and some opinion pieces and articles that I've had posted other places, they can take a look at that. I thought I'd give people the opportunity to take a look at that, go through a history of articles.
So are you ready? We've been talking about, and you brought up a good point too, that during SHOT Show, we were live there a couple of weeks ago, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week. And we were covering, I mean, all the stuff that just happened. I mean, we were talking about Minneapolis and St. Paul and Portland and just all the stuff. It really made our jobs a lot easier because there was just so much going on in the news cycle. Just talking about that was enough. There was just so much to talk about. But are you ready to move on to Portland from St. Paul?
Well, that's that's an interesting shift. I'm not sure we're really changing the subject that much to go from Minneapolis to Portland. But yeah, we can talk about Portland.
We are going to be talking about chemical agents, though, which I you know, with this Portland thing, which excites me because I had a conversation with Jeff Winninger, former LAPD, and I asked Jeff, because we're talking about riots, riot control, and about a judge limiting LAPD's ability to use like the 40 millimeter less lethal launcher. But then I just asked Jeff out of curiosity, do you guys use gas, you know, like chemicals? And there's a difference between what kind of gas you use. But he said no. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, no wonder you guys have so much so many problems if you're not even using gas. I mean, even in Tampa, like we've had 3 days of riots and all kinds, but we got everything under control because I tell you, gas is fantastic. So we'll talk about that more in a second, but lawofficer.com is where the story's from. Portland mayor demands ICE leave after tear gas at a protest. So mayor didn't like that. And I guess he'd rather people get shot with 40 millimeter less lethal launchers and hit with, you know, expandable batons that are like metal pipes. But Portland mayor demands ICE leave after federal agents used tear gas during a weekend protest outside an ICE facility. According to city officials, Mayor Keith Wilson, that's his name, don't forget that, said the daytime demonstration was peaceful and posed no danger to federal agents. But I suspect the feds would differ from that assessment. According to reporting, thousands of demonstrators arrived at an ICE facility in Portland's South Waterfront area on Saturday. Now, thousands of them. What are the odds in Portland that's going to be peaceful? Witnesses describe federal agents deploying tear gas and other less lethal munitions as the crowd approached the facility. So they were encroaching on the area, including in areas where parents and young children were present. Now, the mayor, Keith Wilson, issued a statement that night calling on ICE to leave Portland. In the same statement, he criticized the use of chemical agents during what he described as a peaceful daytime protest and urged ICE personnel to resign, to quit the agency. Now, the AP, the Associated Press, reported that Portland police, they monitored the protest. And it kind of reminds me of Minneapolis police, which are all sitting inside a police headquarters while, instead of wanting to get involved in the action and help ICE out or Border Patrol and prevent it from escalating to where people are getting killed. It sounds like Portland police are doing the same thing. They're monitoring the protest. And here we got the feds having to, launch, chemical agents and stuff and less lethal munitions to protect themselves and maybe other people. And they're just monitoring. And it says that the paramedics treated the people affected by the gas. So I guess they were willing to step in to treat people affected by the gas. The AP also described the building as a federal immigration processing center used to determine the immigration statuses. So, when it comes to gas, I mean, just in short, what I would like to say, Chief, is that, you've got, they say tear gas, you've got OC and CS gas, right? So OC, pepper spray, typically not a dispersing agent because people, your eyes will shut. It's involuntary. You can't help it. Even if you want to open up your eyes and you've been sprayed with OC pepper spray, you're just simply not going to be able to hold your eyes open. It's just the reaction. But with CS gas, you can breathe. It will burn. Your eyes are going to water, your nose and nostrils are just going to be, snot just going to pour out of your nose and stuff, but it's just, it gets uncomfortable, but it's a great dispersing agent because you can run away, walk away. You can see what you're doing. You're totally aware of everything going on. And if you're a cop, you can also protect yourself, because you can see too. Because there's always that cross-contamination thing. So I love gas. I love gas as when you're trying to do a vehicle extraction and you just put a little, you have a canister with a little hose that gets in the door jamb where the window is and you just spray it in and people vamoose. But I don't see that being used a lot anymore, even in demonstrations like this. And when we had the Tampa riots, we had guys with these CS gas canisters, and I mean canisters like scuba tanks on their backs with sprayers, and they would just hose people down. And I'll tell you, it was perfect. And this is in the hood in the projects. And man, they just vamoosed, and the people that were throwing Molotov cocktails and rocks and bottles and stuff and setting dumpsters on fire and all kinds of stuff, they cleared out and it accomplished what we wanted. I don't know what your exposure is, Chief, but your thoughts?
Well, I've been exposed, believe me, both. And I was glad when we transitioned from CN to pepper spray because, the way it works a little different and the effect is more immediate with the pepper spray. But we, the broader issue of less lethal, the courts and sometimes public opinion will want to take those tools away from us. But then you still have the problem and you've got to put in another tool. So, they took away the lateral vascular restraint, erroneously called the chokehold. That was a great tool, PR24. A lot of departments quit using those. Very versatile, effective tool. Taking away the 40 millimeter, and then, as you said, what are you left with? The important part about this Portland thing is they didn't just see, oh, there's a group of people, let's pop them with the tear gas. It's like they were encroaching on the property. They were apparently trying to get in the gates. They were trespassing. They had stopped being demonstrators, and they started being trespassers. And you've got a facility that you have to protect the staff, and you've got to protect the assets, and you've got to protect whatever mission is going on in there. You can't let just people storm the gates. You've got to stop that. And that's what gas does. It doesn't punish people when you're ticked off at them. It's a message to move away and stop doing what you're doing.
Good point. And perfect timing, Chief. It's time for our next commercial break. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. In today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety. It's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. And that's where MyTech, which is a division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MyTech provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. They're Eagle Protect nitrile gloves. They offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, the MyShield disinfectants and the sanitizers, they eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact. And they continue the kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. So when safety is non-negotiable, you can trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need. And you can learn more about how to equip your team today by simply going to ComplianTechnologies.com/MyTech. Again, that's ComplianTechnologies/MyTech, because the best defense starts with the right protection. And hey, if you haven't been to ComplianTechnologies.com yet, go there and check out the glove as well, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, former police chief. He is in the Colorado area. And Chief, I know we've been talking about, St. Paul. We've been talking about Portland. And are you ready to leave Portland and go to North Carolina?
I would just say that we all probably need to pull out our copy of the Constitution. Mine's on my bedside. I don't have it in front of me. And look at the First Amendment. What does the First Amendment protect? First of all, there's nothing in the Bill of Rights that was voted on or given to government. This is a list of God-given rights that we want to ensure and enshrine in the Constitution to keep the government from violating or suppressing those rights. So when we look at the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom to petition the government for redress, freedom from government interference with religion, and freedom of exercise of religion. There's nothing in there that is a license to commit to act in a way that infringes somebody else's First Amendment right. And nor does it give you a license to claim some type of moral superiority that I know people have a right to have church, but my cause is so much greater, I'm going to use my so-called First Amendment right to interfere with their First Amendment right. That's not there. To say that I can march wrong along the sidewalks with signs, absolutely. But to hit somebody with that sign, or to interfere with a police operation, or to trespass on some other person's property or protected property or state property, none of those things is covered by the First Amendment. When Don Lemon says, "Well, I'm a journalist, anything I do basically is protected by the First Amendment." No, absolutely not. It is not a permission to take some self-proclaimed moral high ground and interfere with other people's rights. And that's your sermon for today.
Okay, thanks, Chief. Hey, I noticed we've got Don Turpin on Facebook saying, "Go ICE." We've got Fran weighing in. Looks like she's on YouTube. So thanks for the commentary, guys. We appreciate it, and for the support, and for backing up what we're saying. You know, the goal of the show is to make you guys among the smartest people in the room when it comes to news items. But of course, we don't apologize. We tell the news from a law enforcement perspective, but you guys are getting the inside scoop on a lot of things from the law enforcement perspective too. So thanks, Chief. I appreciate it. And let's go in and hop over to North Carolina real quick. We've got an update article. It's from globalordnancenews.com. Charges dismissed against a former North Carolina officer and a fatal officer involved shooting. So this is Greensboro, North Carolina, but a Guilford, or I guess it's a Guilford County court dismissed manslaughter charges which is something you never want to get charged with as a cop. But this guy's a former Greensboro police officer. His name is Matthew Edward Hamilton, and they dismissed the charges on Friday. So I'll bet he's feeling a little bit better today. Hamilton had been on trial since January the 12th for the November 2021 shooting death of a guy named Joseph Lopez of Greensboro. So to put that in perspective, so that trial started, I guess, over 4 years. Well, I guess it had been over 4 years ago is when that incident happened. And this guy was in the middle of trial. Superior Court Judge David Hall, he was presiding over the case. They expected it to extend through the week before the winter weather closes the court early this week. And he dismissed it. Hamilton was part of a group of officers who searched for Lopez at a home in Greensboro back in 2021. Lopez was wanted for multiple charges of possession of a firearm by felon and assault inflicting serious injury. So when Lopez refused Hamilton's command to come out of a dark shed, Hamilton released his canine into the shed and then fired a shot that ended up killing Lopez. And it doesn't give a lot more information on that. Hamilton said in 2021, just after the incident, they had seen what he thought was something in Lopez's hands, but investigators determined that the guy was unarmed. But it didn't say whether there was anything in his hand that maybe was not a weapon or maybe could have been construed as a weapon. So the trial came nearly 4 years later after Hamilton was indicted on the manslaughter charge, but he ended up being fired from his department. And that happened back in 2022, the very next year. Chief Schultz.
You know, I worked a similar case where a felon was came out of a playhouse that he'd been hiding in somebody's backyard, and the officer fired and made some unfortunate res geste kind of statements, spontaneous utterances. If you shoot somebody, shut up, I would say, as a general rule. They charged him. And fortunately, I had been doing some research through FSI, the Force Science Institute, on one of my own officer-involved shootings. And I went to the prosecutor and I said, this is bogus. It's a bad charge. And so I really, you know, I had a flashback to that when I read about this case. There are a couple of things I'd want to say, and I don't need to chew up, you know, my whole time here with it. But, you know, when you say, well, we didn't find a gun, you know. Well, it doesn't matter, as you implied. It's what the officer reasonably objectively believed at the time and made a split second decision on. And hopefully that's what the judge looked at that and said, well, you know, I don't think this guy, you know, should be criminally charged. But meantime, for years and years and years, you know, I still hear this statement, oh, cops just want to shoot somebody. That's the last thing. We absolutely have to be ready to any moment, but that's the last thing any cop wants to do. You can be sued in state court. You can be sued in federal court. You can be criminally charged in state court. You can be criminally charged in federal court. You can face department sanctions, and your life is going to be absolutely disrupted. Your career is gone. The emotional toll is huge. The family pressure is huge. The PR, you know, getting doxxed and getting hate mail, it's no wonder that in the vast, vast, vast majority of cases, and we can prove this through research, officers who have the legal, moral, ethical, tactical, justifiable belief to use deadly force don't, because they'll do everything they can to avoid it. So there are just so many consequences for this poor guy. And here we are 5 years later from the event, no job, probably drowning in bills, no telling what has happened to his family and reputation in the community, and all for the ultimate result of saying, nah, you're okay. He can't just walk away from that. He can't go back to his career after that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely fallout. So, well, I'm glad that the judge dismissed the case, and hopefully he can get some portion of his life back and recover after this, you know. But yeah, and I can only imagine the bills from the, I don't know about if he had a union or a, you know, an attorney, you know, supplied for him, but wow, you know, he likely is in debt hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, on this thing too. So
I never had one. I was never in a union. I never had a protection plan. I naively, for most of my career, thought my department was going to take care of me. I have since believed that that's never true. You know, Randy Sutton's story is really illustrative of that. You may remember, you know, he had an on-duty injury and they delayed in trying to take care of him. And he finally realized they were just waiting for him to die, because it would have been cheaper for the department for him to meet his demise than to, you know, to pay out what he needed to survive. So my word to cops out there, and if you're a loved one of a cop, ask them, do you have legal insurance? Do you have coverage? Do you have an attorney's name in your speed dial? You need somebody like Lance LaRusso, that, you know, has been on the show.
Yeah.
And defends officers. Your typical defense attorney is not going to have an understanding of the depths of use of force, and maybe even a full understanding of the laws of self-defense, or the privileges that police officers have or think that they have. So it can be very, very devastating. And I'm very fortunate that I never had to pull the trigger. Had plenty of opportunities to. I'm sure you did too. But most of the time we can resolve it without that. Often at great risk to our own lives. Because we don't want to do that. And of course, as many commentators have said on this show, this de-escalation mythology and training out there is really risking people's lives, because they're delaying and trying to accomplish something that is not going to be accomplished without the cooperation of the suspect. I'm glad for this officer, but he's going to have to rebuild his life completely for something that was absolutely justified.
No doubt. You know, my last 6 years were with the police union. And so it was an elected position, but I was, you know, full-time police officer getting paid by the city, but on full-time release to the union. So it was kind of a unique setup. But I'll tell you, most people were members of the union, but there were some who were not until they got in the grease. And then all of a sudden they wanted to join the union to get that free representation. And a lot of it's about relationships too. I can tell you, before we had a labor rep, I would have to represent the officers. And there's a lot of deals that go on behind closed doors. It's all about relationships and about exit strategies and stuff. It's important, guys. If you guys don't miss your opportunity to get that representation or be part of that union, if it's there. Commercial break, we'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and ammunition every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us into trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're a chief or a sheriff, you can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. Wow, we've been talking about a lot of different things. Just an update story that we covered a second ago about an officer, them dropping a manslaughter charge on him. Any final words on that, chief? Are you ready to go on to our video story with the motorcyclist?
No, just again, if you're a cop or a love a cop, make sure they have an attorney, make sure they have an insurance program. You need that expert testimony or you'll never make it through most prosecutions.
That's right. Good advice. Guys, rumble.com is the source of the story. It's the video channel called This Is Butter. Motorcyclist fatally shot when he points a gun at officers during a struggle after pursuit.
Good boy.
I have so far. fired. Shots fired.
Come over! Come over now!
No!
Do it!
Stop!
Do it!
Stop!
Stop! Stop!
And I think it was almost like flashing the gun, but it's interesting how it goes down. It's a little different. I'm going to go to my show notes at the end because it's a little different. Now, this is in Ohio of all places, Ashtabula. Hopefully I said that name correctly. It starts around 2:40 in the afternoon. So the middle of the afternoon, the Ashtabula County Sheriff's Office deputies say that they try to pull over a motorcyclist with no registration and the guy speeds away. So it all starts off without a registered motorcycle, just crazy. Now the Ohio State Patrol jumps into it. So we got troopers and they're chasing this guy for about 20 minutes over a 15-mile area. And the sheriff's office says the pursuit ended in a fiery crash in an intersection. Not really. The guy gets forced off his bike. He ends up having to go off the roadway because it's been 15 miles in 20 minutes. They're getting tired of the chase. And so they just kind of make him uncomfortable on the roadway. He goes off the roadway. Looks like he loses control and he goes into the brush and then he lays the bike down and then he bails off on foot. But there is I don't remember whether it was a trooper or a deputy, but they're like some dude. And I was wondering who's going to shut the bike off, because you can hear the bike winding, you know, it's still going. And I'm thinking, all right, we got this deputy that's about 100 pounds overweight, or trooper. I doubt it was a trooper, because it's mostly, we don't see troopers that look that bad out of shape, right, Chief? It's always, you know, the cops or the deputy. So this big dude is, and I'm thinking he's probably got a Harley parked parked in the garage that he hardly ever gets on. And I'm expecting him to like shut it off. And then all of a sudden he jumps back because all of a sudden a flame starts coming from the bike because it had been running, I'm sure. And it was like all heated up on the grass and stuff. So it catches on fire, but it really wasn't a fiery crash. And meanwhile, this guy is running away. And then they cut to another video where the bad guy, he's on his back and they're trying to get him to roll over. And they send the canine. The canine's already latched onto him. And so about the time they start verbalizing, you know, gun, 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 they see him. He's got, looked like he had a gun in his waistband in the front. Because remember, he's on his back and they're like fighting with him and stuff. And they're trying to get him to roll over in a prone position face down. And then about that time, the dog, whatever the dog had grabbed onto with his mouth, he rips it off the guy, and it looked like maybe a fanny pack or something. I don't know. The dog was happy that he retrieved whatever it was he was latched onto, but he no longer has the bad guy anymore. And then a guy, it looks like a cop, goes in to grab the gun, secure the gun that the bad guy is going for in his waistband, right at the time the cops start to shoot. And so that guy abandons the gun, going for the gun and the bad guy's waistband, and falls back on the in the field, and they light this guy up, and he's dead. He's been identified as Jerry Pegram, was his name. Commentary, Chief Schultz.
I'm not going to be critical in this event either, just some observations. I don't know what I would have done if I'd been one of the 16 cops showed up on this thing. First of all, it sounds like it might have been a parade chase, you know. Most protocols now is, you know, you got a lead car, a second car may be involved, and they do the radio, and then maybe a third car. But after that, everybody's, you know, normal speeds. But judging from the number of cops that showed up on this thing, it's hard to coordinate, and most of us, particularly rural officers, are not really used to working in a team, particularly with other agencies that may have different policy procedure training. So there's a real potential for a cluster to happen when you have that many officers. And, you know, there were, I don't know what the canine's role was here. You got all these officers, some of them are going to lose sight in this dense underbrush that they were going through. And you know, you could be right up on this bad guy and not know it until you get the brush apart. So it's a challenging environment for what amounted to a foot pursuit. I don't know, you know, you should at least know where all the other officers are. I saw a lot of potential crossfire situations where muzzles were not. And I thought, you know, I've run with my weapon out and in my hand. I would not recommend that ever. You know, try to keep it holstered or at least keep it low ready. But to have that gun, you know, going like this when you're jogging and you've got possibly some knucklehead that's going to get you and you've got branches in your face. You know, most of us have lost our shoulder mic at some time during a pursuit or during a wrestling match. But, you know, one really basic kind of rookie advice is do a jump test before your shift and see if anything falls off, because there's nothing more aggravating than to have to retrace your pursuit steps to find your gun and your radio and your taser.
Yeah. Good point.
Because I saw a mic flying around, you know, and that happens. I get it. So you had a canine there. I like, okay, guys, let's line up, get ready to do a grid pattern. And I know things are happening fast and you don't know if you've got an armed subject and there's a lot of excitement. So, you know, looking back from my point and saying, oh, you should have organized a command center and lined up to do a grid search. But you had the dog there. Let the dog go. Let the dog do what the dog does. That'll locate the person and perhaps disable them. Then you can go on from a much more strategic position. And again, it's just an observation. I'm not going to hammer anybody about it. But and the other thing, I haven't worked a lot with canines because, you know, if I call in a canine, I'm going to get in my car and lock the doors because, you know, they can smell fear and they'll come after me. But this dog apparently thought its mission was to get an article of clothing off the bad guy and then retreat. You know, it's just like, you know, this dog is so proud. Look, I got part of his shirt. No, you should be wrestling this guy. The other curious thing is, did you see the ammo they took out of that revolver? I wanted to ask Brett about that. I think that was one of these revolvers that can have a 410 shotgun shell in it, because that was not a typical cartridge.
Oh, interesting. So
that was a big gun. And again, in the heat of the moment, I think an evidence tech would say, why did you disassemble and empty and do all that to the weapon? That, you know, some of the evidence might have been destroyed, or the position of the next round, or primer impressions. But, you know, when you're there and you want to make it safe and you've just shot somebody, then, you know, I get it. So it just a lot of things going on. For you rural officers out there, you know, when you saw that motorcycle go on the gravel road and get off the pavement, gravel means your pursuit's going to end badly. And I'd say 9 times out of 10, it's going to end badly for the officer, because it's a whole different driving experience. It's like driving on ice, and motorcycles are particularly not good on gravel. So when he flamed out there, even though it was almost like a side pit kind of box in thing with the one sheriff's office, I thought this pursuit's not going to last very long. The fire was just a Hollywood special effects addition to the whole event.
Yeah.
I was just as surprised as the guy that jumped.
Yeah.
Oh, I got somebody that I'm going to check. Oh my gosh, there's a bomb just went off. So it was a very interesting convolution of a lot of different factors there. It'd be a good good roll call video to watch and think about.
I agree. The dog was happy though. He got what he wanted, whatever that was,
yeah,
in his mouth.
Yeah.
So
ask that trainer, is that what you trained him to do? Go pick his pocket and then come back, you know, 10 feet away, right, and let the officers deal with it.
It makes me wonder if he ever really was latched onto the bad guy, or it was just this, like, you know, bag or pouch that he had. But another great show, Chief Schultz. Thanks so much for being on the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org, and also our sponsors, please support our sponsors, guys. We have Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, and TwoBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.